Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores, making the switch as easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
I'm Mr. White Christmas. I'm Mr. Snow. I'm Mr. Icicle. I'm Mr. Ten Below. Friends call me Snow Miser. Whatever I touch turns to snow in my clutch. I'm too much.
Hello and welcome once again to The Cinephiles, where today we are continuing our exploration of the holiday classics from Rankin and Bass. My name is Steve Morris. I'm a filmmaker and directing instructor in Los Angeles, California.
Hello, everyone. My name is John Roque. I'm a writer, producer, and host and voiceover artist here in San Diego, California.
And today I'm very excited because my partner, John Stephen Roca, will be leading us through the wonderful world of The Year Without a Santa Claus, because I think this is your favorite, isn't it?
This is absolutely my favorite of the Rankin Bass ones. I know that some people over the years have poked holes in the story. I mean, who's out here trying to be Siskel and Ebert on these things?
But like,
I
know we are.
Are we? Yeah. But I mean, I just love this one. I like the story within it. I like the Heat Miser and Snow Miser characters, and I just like the overall energy of this one. That by the end, Santa realizes, you know, that it's that the kids love him and that that it does matter what he does. And look, everybody who works a job sometimes, and people just tend to rely on that person, they can start to feel a little underappreciated. People don't take the time and effort to tell them how much they appreciate their work. So, you know, the genesis of this one is a very strong one, and it's still holds up for me, still makes me laugh, still makes me cry by the end. And I just love it to death.
It really is a lot of fun, and it definitely has, I think, the best banger of a song in all of these Rankin and Bass things by far. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. But before we jump into it, we should say that the best way to support The Cinephiles is through patreon.com/thecinephiles or Apple Podcasts, where you can get ad-free versions of the show as well as access to our Cinephile shorts, including right now we have a Cinephile short out on some of the other Rankin and Bass films that we love. So we definitely talk about those there. And on patreon.com/thecinephiles, you can also join our advisory board and ask questions that appear sometimes in shows and have other benefits that are a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. Another way you can support the show is also by patronizing the many sponsors that we have on the show. You hear them at the beginnings of the show and at the end of the show and sometimes in the middle of the show. You hear these great companies that support us. And so if the products stand out to you and you want to try them out or use them, we can encourage you enough to do that and use our code. Because when you use our code, it inspires them to want to keep supporting us here on The Cinephiles. We want to keep doing the show, and that all that helps us to keep doing it as we go along.
Yes, absolutely. We definitely could use your involvement. Plus, it's a lot of fun, particularly on Patreon, to interact with all of you there. Yeah. But right now, I'm excited about interacting with The Year Without a Santa Claus. So, John, please take us on this journey.
All right. Let's go through the misty, snow-filled sands of time. And here we go back to 1974, The Year Without a Santa Claus. It was the year without a Santa Claus. This special, it was directed by Arthur Rankin Jr. and Jules Bass. It was based on the book by Pulitzer Prize-winning author Phyllis McGinley. She also wrote another Christmas story in 1963 called How Mrs. Claus Saved Christmas. And both of the stories were combined to create this Rankin and Bass special, which I, as I said, I absolutely supremely love. So fascinating thing about this film here, or the special rather, it was adapted by William Keenan. This is one of those rare ones that isn't written by, was it Romeo Mueller who did the other ones? And the music here is by Maury Laws and the lyrics are by Jules Bass. So I think that's another reason why I think it might be a little bit different, Steve. It's a different writer who's doing the teleplay and doing the adaptation.
I think it definitely feels different. I think the sense of humor is a little bit different. We did talk about in the other episode some of those gags that were very common in the first set of movies, and I don't think they're there as much in this one. It's definitely a different feel.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we should just jump into the movie or the special. You ready?
I am ready to go.
Let's do it. All right. We begin with a beautiful shot of the North Pole and some light, fun Christmas music plays as we focus in on a clock that goes by months. And this one says December. It's almost Christmas, Steve. I've never had a clock with months on it. Have you?
I have not had that kind of clock. I think in today's world, I really need one that's going by seconds, not by months. Things move pretty fast around here.
That's for sure. If you don't stop and look around a bit, you might miss it. But there's no newsreels to start this one, Steve. Another way that it's a little bit different. Instead, we hear a slightly older female voice asking us if we've been told.
Have you been told? Did you ever hear of the curious, furious, fidgety year when Santa Claus unhitched his sleigh and vowed he was taking a holiday?
And this, of course, is the great Shirley Booth. She is an Oscar, Emmy, and Tony Award winner. She started acting in 1915 and had a huge career on Broadway, including acting with some of the greats like Bogart in 1925. Hmm. On Broadway, she acted with Hepburn and Ralph Bellamy in 39, doing radio in the 40s. And this is, you know, I am sure she's hobnobbing with Orson Welles and all those other, you know, Broadway actors who are also doing radio. She wins her first Tony Award in 1948, her second Tony Award in 1950 for Comeback Little Sheba, which she came and made her film debut in 1952, also winning the Academy Award for her performance with Burt Lancaster. What's so crazy to me is, I mean, that's an impressive resume. She only makes 5 movies.
Wow.
That's total. And then, you know, where I grew up knowing her was that she's the lead on Hazel, which ran from 61 to 66. And this role as Mrs. Claus is her final role.
Yeah, she retires from acting after this role. And I tell you, I think she's the number one reason this special is great. Her voiceover work, her narration, her giggling and leading us through this story and giving that grandmother feel, but also very stern approach to the situation and crafty approach to the situation. I think that's another reason why these Rankin and Bass, we've said this already in our conversations about it, another reason why these things work so well is they find these very experienced actors to lead the way in these specials and give that right amount of Christmas warmth and affection while also giving a little bit of joy and glee into everything that we're experiencing in these specials, for sure.
How do I know so much about Santa? Well, I'm Mrs. Claus. It was long ago before you were living. Not yet Christmas, but past Thanksgiving.
But she can't remember the year of when this all happened. That's very convenient. We do an old school dissolve, if you remember those old school dissolves, to Santa, who is in his room here, putting on his boots, getting ready for his day. And this is voiced once again by the legendary Mickey Rooney reprising his role as Santa in here.
And it's great. I think that bit of continuity between the movies, having that voice the same, makes a huge, huge difference for the show.
Yes, that's the RBU, right, Steve? What we talked about, the Rankin and Bass universe. So, but he tells us that he's tired and delivers a rhyme about all his tasks that he has to do and the physical maladies that he's suffering. Steve, you and I are getting up in age. I think we have a crick in our backs, a cold in our nose sometimes, aches in our fingers and all 10 toes.
And a sort of kind of kink inside whenever I think of that Christmas ride.
This is an interesting approach, isn't it, Steve? The rhyming couplets throughout as we begin here in telling the story.
You talked about the difference between this and the earlier Rankin and Bass. Well, this, the way they do the rhyming, and I like that they do rhyming both in the narration and in the dialogue, and we kind of come in and out of it. I haven't read this original book, but my guess is a lot of this is from that original book.
Well, you know who read the original book? There is actually, you can, I think you can watch it on YouTube, or you can find the audio file on social media. Boris Karloff read the original. Okay. There is a 16 and a half minute reading of Boris Karloff reading this story. And it's, I highly recommend people finding it on social media. I watched it off Twitter or finding it on YouTube. It is a hell of a thing to listen to from Boris Karloff reading these lines. Mrs. Claus tells Santa that she's sent for the doctor as Santa's laid back in bed, clearly very tired, and that he'll be back on his feet in no time. So she's excited to help him out because she knows Christmas is important, needs this to happen. Just then the doctor walks in, Steve, and this is a balding, older doctor, all in red, looks like red pajamas, with an angry look on his face and a grumpy theme to match.
Probably never got over the case of near pneumonia you picked up last year, gallivanting around the world in your open sleigh. And for what? Just to deliver presents to a bunch of folks who don't give a hoot in the first place.
I think the medical system at the North Pole has definitely evolved since Hermie had gotten so much trouble just for wanting to be a dentist. He was told, no, you have to giggle and be nice and be happy and just love making toys like all the other elves. Here we got an elf doctor. Man, this guy is a jerk.
Yeah.
He's definitely has not been trained in the happy elf ways that we saw back way back in Rudolph.
Not at all. And I guess they had to get people who were, you know, willing to come and be in the North Pole and work. And maybe only this crotchety old guy was the only guy they could find to come up into to work as a doctor up in the North Pole.
I mean, when you look at the North Pole HMO, there's actually is some limited choice you have to do. Plus the copays are murder up there. It's brutal.
It's a lot of candy canes.
Now, doctor, it's not just presents, and you know it. What about all that Christmas spirit and goodwill?
If you had any sense, you'd give it up as a bad job and stay home in bed this year.
But Mrs. Claus isn't having any of that. It's an indication here, Steve, that no matter what obstacles are in the way, it is Mrs. Claus who is like an icebreaker bashing through to make sure that by the end, Santa does choose to go on this ride. She knows how important it is overall for him to do this, you know?
Nobody cares about Christmas anymore.
They don't?
Of course not. Wouldn't surprise me none if nobody even believes in you anymore.
But before he leaves, he does wish Santa a Merry Christmas. So this is a whirlwind of negativity that kind of lays a little bit of the groundwork, Steve, that this idea, once again, of like, there is no Christmas spirit, or people are losing their love of Christmas. And this becomes the theme throughout the special. This is a little bit of foreshadowing of what we're going to see when we get to Iggy and other people about Santa not having that Christmas spirit. It's very reminiscent of Elf, remember, needing to jazz up the Christmas spirit so that they could fly the sleigh.
I think this is a theme we could go all the way back to Tinkerbell or even earlier of like...
Sure.
And even religious themes of like, they need you to believe. Your faith is their power, you know?
Right.
And so if you lose your faith, then they lose their power. I think that's a really, really common theme. And I also think it's something, the idea of people have lost their Christmas spirit or their holiday spirit or what this holiday is really about. We still hear that as a news story literally every single year.
Yeah.
And every single year, I think there is truth of it being too commercial, of people not being kind, of all those things that are happening. And in every year, there are ways that people are finding their Christmas spirit. But it's part of why this episode is always topical. It still fits.
Yeah. And what's the one we just discussed that has that idea of losing the Christmas spirit or people don't feel the same way anymore? We just discussed one of the Rankin and Bass specials that has that element to it as well, right? So kind of going back to the well again with this idea of Christmas spirit not being there fully like people were hoping. Yeah, at the end, right? The guy who says, you know, I don't believe in Christmas, or, well, it's, you know, it's too much, or bah humbug, all of that, right?
Nobody really cares anymore. And besides, the doctor says I'm really not up to snuff. Besides, I'm due for a holiday.
So, Steve, what's your feeling of this when you're right off the bat here? Santa is due for a holiday. Are you surprised that Santa actually wants to take the year off?
As a kid, this was a total betrayal. This was Santa has one job.
Yeah.
He is supposed to deliver Christmas. he doesn't get to take you. He gets magic reindeer and can fly a sleigh and has all these powers and gets to live at the North Pole. He gets a great life. And what he has to do is deliver Christmas to me. That is how I felt as a kid. And watching it this time, I had such a strong, I won't say it was a dad reaction. I think dads, moms, people that aren't parents, every single person at some point feels burnt out, unappreciated,
sure,
doesn't feel like getting up to doing the same job that nobody seems to care about. Nobody seems to notice all the hard work. The family's always dependent upon them.
Yeah.
I have definitely felt this way many, many times. And so watching it this time, I was going, yeah, you do deserve a break. Give Santa a break. He's been doing this for 1,000 years. He could use a year off. That's how I felt this time.
Yeah, totally understandable. It's a very humanist point of view. We even do this, and I don't want to get too far off of what we're talking about, but we also do this with our deities, right? With our religion. You must praise God. You must praise the person you believe in. And it's like, well, if the person is all powerful, they don't need the praise. If the person is all knowing, they don't need the praise. But it's a very human thing to think that Santa, it makes sense, right? Because you want to make it relatable. It makes sense that Santa would be exhausted from doing this every year, right? Even though he's an unusual being who lives forever, he doesn't mean he can't get tired or doesn't need appreciation, you know? So I think that's a smart way to approach it that feels relevant. If you're a kid, you've probably heard your father say these things as you're watching the special, you know, so it kind of makes you feel connected to the character as well. So smart choice, I think, overall.
I think as a kid, your father might have said these things.
Yeah.
But I don't think we were so good at hearing them.
That's fair. Probably true.
Did you ever hear of that terrible year way back before you were born? When Santa Claus took a holiday on the night before Christmas morn.
And we get our 1970s opening credits basically retelling what we just saw, Steve, and seeing all the sadness in the town. And I was wondering to myself, I don't know if you thought this, is this what used to be Somber Town? Like if we're talking about a Rankin and Bass universe, is this Somber Town years later, who've had Christmas now for decades and are just maybe now moving away from Christmas because they've had it so much, they're taking it for granted? What do you think of these opening credits, and is this Somber Town?
So I've always related it to Somber Town, but I actually think it's not Somber Town because Somber Town, clearly German and in the North.
Oh, good point. Yes,
and this is clearly in the South.
America. And this is America.
In America, yeah. So I don't think it is, but there's definitely the same feeling of this is a more modern version of the town that has lost its way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And aren't you surprised when you hear this? Like Shirley Booth has a few songs in this special. You're like, you retired after this? Like you're so still good. You're so still at the top of your game, right?
Yeah, no, it really surprised me that she called it quits.
You know? Yeah. I love these opening credits as well. There's a joy, even though they're singing about a year without a Santa Claus, the song itself has a joyful rhythm. So I kind of like that about the song there. So after these opening credits, now we get our newspaper headline, Steve, screaming that Santa's, quote, too tired and not coming, with a conspicuous photo of Santa asleep in his chair. Must have been a North Pole paparazzi who got caught through the window, Steve. Also, there is panic in New York. Menagerie breaks loose. I have no idea what that means.
Well, a menagerie is a zoo. So
Got loose?
Yes, the animals got loose. I mean, the menagerie is the episode of Star Trek that you joined us for.
Right.
That is what the menagerie is.
I've never connected that in that way. How interesting. Oh, okay. All right. Well, there you go.
This is one of the weird things that, and I will say, just doesn't make sense about this show.
Okay.
Which is that what we're talking about a lot is faith. And do people believe in Santa Claus and the importance of them continuing to believe? While at the same time, the news is clearly in touch with the actual Santa who is in contact with them. So it doesn't seem to me that believing in Santa is really a problem. It's really well established in this world that he exists, you know?
Yeah. And it's not like it's buried on page 11. This is
the headlines say there is a Santa Claus. Exactly. So why are we not believing in him?
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night?
Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that, your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
So we cut to Mrs. Claus and Santa Claus letting us know in rhyming couplets that the reindeer are to be put back in the stables and the toy making tables be covered up because they're staying home.
Cover the dolls.
And electric trains.
And the rocking horses with shaggy manes.
And the rubber boots for splashing in parks.
And the cowboy suits.
And the Noah's arks.
Steve, did you get a Noah's Ark when you were a kid? I don't even recall asking for that or even that they made those things.
That was not among my list of toys, but I definitely remember Noah's Ark's toys. There definitely was a Noah's Ark toys that some kid I knew had. And I had to say, man, since Rudolph, the toy manufacturing ability of the elves has gone way up.
Oh, yeah.
This is some much improved toys by the time we get to this movie.
That's a good point. Now, as a call comes into the elves' work area to let us know all this, we meet Jingle Bells and Jangle Bells. And Steve, we get a bit of slapstick here and a bit of humor.
Oh, hi, Mrs. Claus. Yes, Mrs. Claus. Okay, Mrs. Claus. Sure thing, Mrs. Claus. Right away, Mrs. Claus.
Who was that?
Oh. That was... Come on.
And this is old school, like vaudeville shticky humor. I love it.
Yeah, and Jingle is played by Bob McFadden, who also does the voice of the Doctor. And you know, you look at his resume, it's a lot of Rankin and Bass stuff. Mm-hmm. And the same is true of Bradley Bulk, who plays Jangle. Again, a great career in animation where he's in a lot of stuff that you would recognize.
Yeah. And this is like the Rankin and Bass specials, bringing in these actors from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. This is like a Laurel and Hardy. This is like a duo, totally. Right? Because you clearly have our dynamic. Jingle is the earnest and slightly worried go-getter, and Jangle is the sweet but slightly slower elf whose heart is in the right place with all of this stuff, right?
Who, and I think, by the way, Jangle looks like a particular era of John Lennon to me.
Oh, interesting.
I've decided.
Oh, okay. All right. Then suddenly we cut to Mrs. Claus trying on a Santa hat, proclaiming that it almost fits, which leads us into a song about how anyone can be Santa Claus, including her. And it brought me back to Spider-Verse, that animated, the first one, the Spider-Verse film, where Stan Lee saying anyone can be Spider-Man. And he said this in interviews as well, because you don't see his face, his skin color, or his gender under the mask. And so I found that interesting as a connective tissue here to her singing about being Santa Claus, and we see her go through a montage of riding a sleigh, delivering presents, looking at herself in the mirror, going into chimneys, all this kind of stuff. So it's an interesting place to put this song right as Santa is essentially saying that he's going to shut it all down. And she's talking about possibly being Santa Claus. And she even sings that she's been thinking about it for years.
Oh, anyone can play Santa. I've fantasized it a lot. With his hat upon my head and his suit of Christmas red, I could be Santa Claus.
I like the sentiment of this song a lot. I'll tell you a story really briefly. I was trying to decide when Jackson was born, how much we were going to push Santa Claus. We were having discussion because it's a weird thing. It's like, listen, you know, like you are going to do a bunch of stuff to pretend that there's this character Santa Claus. And, you know, like are you going to put out the cookies and tell the legends and say, and like, do you take bites out of the cookies and a bite out of the carrot? So it looks like the reindeer was there. Like, do you do all those things to make it look like Santa Claus was there? How much of a show are you going to put on? And to me, it was always like, well, I always want to be honest with my kid. And this feels like kind of lying. Like what? And I talked to Hoover about it. And Hoover said, no, Santa is great because first you believe in Santa. Then you get to become Santa, and then you'll end up looking like Santa. And I was like, okay, that kind of makes sense. What I like about this song and I like about this idea is basically we're all Santa. If we talk about what is the Christmas spirit is one of giving and kindness and charity and all of those things. And so this idea of anyone can be Santa, that's, you know, like I am an atheist who's Jewish. And so like but I still believe like, hey, if we get to go be Santa and give to the world at this time and give to the people we love, that's kind of awesome. And so that's why I really like this song.
Yeah, fair point. Well, this is what happens when you have creatives for parents. They're all worried about how to set the stage. You know, my dad just was like, yeah, Santa's been here. All the cookies are gone. That was basically it. So
it wasn't a show. Didn't put on a show.
Not a show at all. All right. And then as the song ends, we cut to Jingle and Jangle through the window, mistaking Mrs. Claus as Santa. But when she turns around, they realize that it's her. She says, well, we need to move to a plan B since they could tell it was her. So she assigns Jingle and Jangle the task of finding some Christmas spirit and goodwill from last year in the town to help Santa change his mind. This excites the elves, and Vixen, who is the reindeer they were riding in on, is assigned to be with them to go off on this journey. And clearly, Steve, this is going to be a long ride and adventure because she tells them to send a card when they can. So how far away is the North Pole from these towns, even on a reindeer?
Well, I was doing a little bit of research for this, and one of the things I saw was that Southtown is based on Oxford, Mississippi.
Oh, interesting.
So okay. I'm sure we could bring up Google Maps and get an exact distance between the North Pole and Oxford, Mississippi, but I'm going to say it's in the thousands of miles.
yeah, sounds right. And Mrs. Claus says she tells us that she had to take this drastic measure because of what Santa was saying, and we see Santa in his bed being woken up by the racket going on out there. And Mrs. Claus does a little passive aggressive conversation about
it was just one of the reindeer getting himself some exercise, dear. What with all the rest and relaxation around here, everybody's jumpy as a leapfrog. It just isn't natural for this time of year.
They'll get used to it. I have already. I tell you, this is life.
So he's clearly taking a year off very quickly, Steve. He is excited about this and enjoying it.
Again, Team Santa here. Like, he deserves a vacation. I think Santa could go to Club Med and have a piña colada as far as I'm concerned.
Fair point. And what happens next is, if you've ever been in a long-term relationship, you know these moments, because she's clearly manipulating him here, Steve, with little shots about it being a natural for them to have this free time, all these people at this time of year, as she irons here. But Santa sees through her pretty quickly, as you do in a relationship of years, and wants to know what are you up to, mama? And then she comes clean, kinda. She makes it seem like it was the elves' idea to drum up some Christmas goodwill to show Santa that people still care about Christmas, when it was actually her idea.
You mean they went down there out into that cruel world by themselves?
Oh, of course not, silly. Vixen went with them.
Vixen? She's just a baby.
And now Santa realizes that he has to go after them, Steve, because he worries that they won't get past the Miser brothers, which causes Mrs. Claus some concern since she totally forgot about them. So what an interesting back and forth between the two. Mrs. Claus thinking it was going to go one way, but it clearly went the other way. And now Santa has to get out of bed and go handle this. So do you think that she did this on purpose to get a reaction from Santa, or did this kind of just snowball, for lack of a better term, and now Santa's on Dasher going after these two and Vixen?
I definitely don't think that she purposely chose Vixen, knowing Santa would worry about Vixen so that Santa would go after them. I don't think that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
What?
That's complex.
Yeah, that would be a lot to do. I don't think she did that. What I really like about the scene is that it's really an evolution in terms of writing. Like, these are real characters. Yeah. When Santa and Mrs. Claus, you feel like they have a relationship, and she's trying to manipulate him, and he's seeing through her, and she's withholding things, and he feels that she's withholding. You feel like an actual relationship, as opposed to, and this is not meant as a criticism, but the sort of I would say, iconic characters of Rudolph and Santa Claus is coming to town. They are, here is Santa, here is, you know, like they're very much like a caricature, whereas these characters feel very, very lived in.
Yeah.
I also have to go like, all right, just as Dad finally got to relax in his easy chair, it's the moment that he's starting to feel comfortable and goes, ah, this is the life. Yeah. Some disaster comes along and he has to get up and go try to solve the problem.
The kids run off with the baby reindeer and he's got to go solve the problem.
Exactly. Yep.
And Santa replying to the concern of the Miser Brothers, and this is our first hint that the Miser Brothers are coming.
Why, if Snow Miser doesn't freeze him just for the fun of it, his devil of a brother will put the heat on him for sure.
He gets dressed and calls for Dasher, as I said, and takes off in his hat and cane because, you know, he's a gentleman. He's going to go off looking proper. And now Mrs. Claus introduces us to Snow Miser and Heat Miser, who pop up on the screen, and we're told that they represent the North and South Poles. And Mrs. Claus tells us that thanks to her, Jingle and Jangle are headed right between the two. So she seems concerned, but she doesn't seem overly overly scared about the situation. And we cut to Jingle and Jangle on Vixen as they fly in between Heat Miser and Snow Miser. Now, before we get to what happens here, Steve, what are your thoughts on the Miser Brothers being added to this story? This was not in either of the two original stories from Phyllis McGinley. And what are your thoughts on the designs of Heat Miser and Snow Miser to represent their respective temperature-laced areas?
So this is based on two stories, and Heat Miser and Snow Miser aren't in either of them?
Not in either of them. This is an original creation for the story, added for the story.
This is what makes the show.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, this is the if you mention anything, if you say to someone Year Without a Santa Claus, like, I don't know if I've seen that. You then say the one with Heat Miser and Snow Miser and they go, oh, my God, I love that one.
Right.
That's what makes this show. It's these the rest of it. It is all really, really well done. The animation, as we said, they continue to level up. Shirley Booth is great. The story is interesting. There's lots of fun stuff, but it's Heat Miser and Snow Miser for me that elevate this into a classic.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a smart move, and ends up becoming the thing, as you said, that decorates this special and makes people know this special. And they become the breakout stars of this special, because a lot of people, I've seen reviews in doing research for this conversation, where a lot of people felt that the overall message of the film, or the special rather, is lost because people are so focused on the Heat Miser and Snow Miser battle and love that so much that they forget the message of this special. And they did sequels to this one. They did a live action version of this one. They did a Heat Miser Snow Miser spinoff one where the voice of Heat Miser came back and Mickey Rooney came back to voice Santa. None of them were ever as successful as this particular special. So, in fact, some of them were kind of insulting. A lot of people felt, I was reading in reviews, of what they were trying to do and trying to recapture the magic of this. Anyway, we see Jingle and Jangle on Vixen as they fly in between Heat Miser and Snow Miser. And we hear Heat Miser, who is upset at Jingle and Jangle, wanting to come through.
Don't just stand there, you fools. They're part of that Santa Claus gang of goody goodies. They must be on their way to start everybody dreaming of a white Christmas again. Don't let them get through.
And gets his mini-me's on board here to try and attack Jingle and Jangle. And he orders his minions to, quote, singe their britches. As Snow Miser looks on and laughs, Heat Miser's minions use a steel reflector to send two beams of heat up there that hit poor Vixen and knock off Jingle and Jangle. But, you know, it's weird. Mrs. Claus blames Vixen because she says she never thought that Vixen would fly the elves straight into Heat Miser's territory. And I'm like, wait, it's Vixen's fault? and Jingle and Jangle fall as we cut to a TV black commercial break, which normally would be here in the special. So what are your thoughts on this sequence here, Steve, and Mrs. Claus blaming baby Vixen for this issue?
It's just like Burgermeister Meisterburger blaming the toy for him stepping on it. This is Mrs. Claus's plan. This is your fault. Or there were humans that were, I assume, guiding Vixen.
Yeah.
But the other thing I think is interesting is it's just what happens in Santa Claus is Coming to Town, in the sense that we go by the Winter Warlock, but then go to Sombertown and have stuff happen here. And it's only in Coming Back Later that we actually have the conversation with the Winter Warlock.
Right.
That's the same thing. We set up Heat Miser and Snow Miser, but we're not going to really deal with them until later on in the show.
Yeah. And I imagine they're much more far apart in reality than they are when we see them on the screen here so close together, looking like they could step across into each other's world at any moment. As we come back from the black frame, Vixen saves the elves before they hit the ground, and Heat Miser is not happy about this development as Snow Miser hits him with a snowball, and Heat Miser retaliates with a heat blast at Snow Miser's buttocks there. So Mrs. Claus now gives Vixen credit for getting the elves out of a tight spot. The elves are flying above here, jingle and jangle with Vixen, and they see Southtown below them.
That looks like as good a place as any to find some Christmas spirit. Take her down, Vixen, old girl.
So here we go into Southtown. Steve, they notice that the streets are empty. And as they're walking around, just kind of figuring out where are all the people, a policeman pulls them over, gives them a ticket for violating a couple of traffic ordinances and wearing red, bright clothes on a Sunday. Very similar to Sombertown. So maybe some of those elements stayed in certain towns here, this idea of wearing bright red clothes on a Sunday. It seems odd.
I mean, wherever you have civilization, somewhere there's going to be the man, and the man is going to come down on you. I mean, this is not unlike the opening of First Blood. I'm just saying. They roll in a town and immediately get harassed for their outfits, and, you know, this cop definitely wants them to move along.
We're going to find some Christmas spirit in this town. I love that. That's a whole nother rambo. When the elves try to protest, he tells them to tell it to the judge and then rides off. Jingle thinks they don't like reindeer in these parts, a random thought to have, and disguises Vixen as a dog using Jangle's socks. Steve, I don't know if I'd want to put someone's sweaty socks on a poor baby reindeer's ears, but I guess it works. And it's a little reminiscent of Nestor the Long-Eared Donkey when they put the socks on Nestor's ears to hide them, you know?
All I'm saying is that Vixen gets really, really sick very, very soon. I'm not saying it is because of the socks, but I'm not saying it's not.
Yeah, how much are they exposed to elves' germs, these reindeer? That's a great point. Well, they come upon an angry older woman who does not believe in Santa Claus at her age, and her rap all of a sudden comes to life as a cat, Steve. This is something that's like, you know, slash stop motion animation type of unbelievability that's fun to see, that the rap all of a sudden comes to life as a cat. And Vixen and the cat chase each other down the street with the woman, the older woman, and the elves running behind.
So this woman, she got up this morning.
Yes.
She got her newspaper. On the front page of the newspaper is a story about Santa Claus. And then when someone asks her about Santa Claus, she says, I don't believe in that.
Right.
This is essentially, she's saying, it's fake news.
But you're assuming she even reads the newspaper.
Fair. That's fair.
I don't know, but you're right. It would be fake news if she read it and tossed it to the side. That's true. Yeah. And then we wipe to Santa talking to the cop who pulled the elves over.
They didn't get into any trouble, did they, officer?
I'll say they got in trouble. Wait till the judge gets finished with them lawbreakers. He'll give them what for.
Not much Christmas spirit there, just as I feared.
So this is kind of a second journey that's going on here with Santa that'll be really interesting as it progresses here, especially when Iggy comes into the situation.
They're in trouble already. We better find them quick, poor little guys. Must be scared to death.
No matter how angry he might be, he wants them to be okay. And right on cue, we cut to them in a tree with Vixen as Jangle says,
I'm scared to death.
Serves you right. Bark for the Lady Rover, indeed.
Why don't we just skip the whole business and go home?
I'd like to, but I'd hate to let Mrs. C down.
And Jangle, you know, to his credit here in a stressful situation, suggests that they go talk to the kids, because the kids are the ones who believe in Santa Claus, and ask them about Santa. So they eventually climb down and head to a playground as Vixen looks to be coming down with a fever, which Steve was referencing. They leave her under the tree, thinking that a little bit of rest would do her good. And they come upon some kids playing ball under the American flag. An interesting look here, Steve, and how it's framed.
Listen, there is a connection between Americana and Christmas and Santa Claus, 100%.
Right, and Rankin and Bass.
You mean you don't care if Santa Claus comes or not? None of you?
Nah. Of course not. It's none of our business. Besides, believing in Santa Claus is for little kids.
Yeah.
What year did you realize that you believing in Santa Claus was for little kids?
In my memory, I never believed in Santa Claus.
Oh, wow.
Ever. My sister did. Oh, because, you know, like, so for in my house, and again, Jewish kid who grew up celebrating Christmas, so a little bit weird, but in my house, instead of putting out milk and cookies, we put out Coca-Cola and Mystic Mints, which was my dad's favorite cookie, and my dad was never a drinker. He drank Coca-Cola. And so to me, I just always knew, like, oh, it was like an improv. It was yes and. Like, I always knew that my parents were putting on this little kind of show and that I was supposed to pretend to believe in the show. But I always knew it was in my memory.
Yes.
I really do think that this is part of my atheism is like, it was like, I love the stories. I've always loved the stories. I love religious stories. I love all those things. They're can be very moving. But I never really believed in any of these things. So there you go.
We've got to get your mom to chime in on this. We got to get her memories of bringing you up in this house about Christmas. I want to hear what she remembers.
We could definitely ask her and see what she says.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah.
This causes Jingle and Jangle to really worry that the lack of Christmas spirit is bigger than they thought. But before they can really grasp the problem, the main kid tells them they got bigger problems because the dog catcher has Vixen. And Steve, we turn to see this angry dog catcher throwing Vixen into his old school dog catcher van as Jingle and Jangle turn around to yell and run after the dog catcher's truck down the street. So not to be forgotten, Mrs. Claus now comes in and tells us that the main kid's name is Ignatius Thistlewhite. What a great name. Ignatius Thistlewhite, Steve. When you're coming up with names in your scripts, I mean, how important is it to get the names right?
I suck. It's one of the hardest things. There's some people that are so good at it that come up with such fantastic names. Like if you would watch Parks and Recreation, like every single name they have, all the characters are all hilarious, fantastic names. There are so many characters in my scripts named Jack, Sarah, John, George. Like I'm so boring. My titles are boring. I have many, many talents, but coming up with names and titles are not among them.
You wouldn't have come up with Sweetums? That's such a great name.
Oh, my God. But I should say that Iggy is played by Colin Duffy, and this is, as far as I can tell, the only thing he ever did.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think he's great here.
I do, too.
He didn't know it at the time, but he was going to be a much bigger help to the two little elves and to all of us than he could ever imagine.
And so a little foreshadowing for us wanting to connect to this character. Because when he got home later, Santa, for some reason, pops out from behind a tree asking for help. Just happened to be Ignatius's house. So how interesting that he would show up at the same location where the kid had just spoken to the elves.
Look, there's a lot of coincidences in movies. But this is a big... The issue to me isn't that he shows up at his house, is that he has no reason to be here at all.
That's what I'm saying.
If you go, you know, Santa needed to do something specifically at a house and a coincidence ended up at the house with the kid that just met Jingle Jangle.
Yeah.
That's a classic movie coincidence. But Santa just randomly, just for no, he was supposed to be looking for Vixen. How is going to this house helping him look for Vixen? It makes no sense. But, you know, we got to move stuff along here.
We do. But I shout out to the performer, as you mentioned his name here, who plays Iggy, because this is an old school portrayal. This is like the Bowery Boys, this kind of portrayal of Iggy, to make it seem time specific in a way. And I thought that was great.
My name's Ignatius Thistlewhite. Everybody calls me Iggy. What's yours?
Klaus.
You should have said Chris. I think Chris would have been way more satisfying.
Good point. But maybe with the Rankin Bass universe, they're like Klaus. We have to make people remember that. But you're right. Chris would have worked. I agree. Santa asks him if Iggy met the elves and Iggy relays his talk with them. And just as Iggy is explaining the situation, right in the middle of a sentence, Santa drops one honker of a sneeze. Which brings out Iggy's mom from the window.
Ignatius, was that you I heard sneeze? Not me, Mom. It was my friend, Mr. Klaus. Well, why don't you bring him inside and talk, and I'll give him something for that cold.
Again, this does not make sense. It's like Santa just found out that the people that he's looking for and Vixen that he's really worried about, he got some clues to their whereabouts.
Yeah.
And now he just goes into this random house because he sneezed. Like, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me.
That's true. He's on his own journey. And we cut to Santa walking into the kitchen with Iggy. And as Iggy introduces him to his parents, Santa drops another massive sneeze, which, by the way, for those of you who don't know, some of you youngins who listen to us, your sneezes do get louder and more profound as you get older. Let me just tell you that. I sneeze like my dad now, and he used to shake the house, and I'd never experienced that before earlier in life. I don't know.
It's very satisfying. Power sneezes, like, it's nice.
It's nice. Mrs. Thistlewhite gives Santa some tea, and Iggy talks about the elves asking him about Santa Claus, and his dad wants to know what he said, and Iggy plays the cool kid.
Heck, I don't believe in Santa Claus anymore. That's kid stuff, isn't it?
And then asks his dad about it.
Why, yes. Matter of fact, I do.
How about you?
Me? Why, of course I do.
And we get a song correlating Santa Claus to love.
I believe in Santa Claus, like I believe in love. I believe in Santa Claus. Everything he does.
An interesting back and forth here at the dinner table before we get into the song, Steve. Like, Iggy is playing the cool kid, but his dad still believes. And that's what happens, right? Like, well, I guess for those of us who weren't Steve Morris, you believe in Santa, then you stop believing in Santa. And then as you get older, you actually reappreciate Santa, whether you have kids or not, because of what it represents in terms of Christmas, if you like the Christmas season, you know?
So so first of all, Dad is played by Ron Marshall, who also plays the mayor later on. Again, a small animation list of credits, but nothing super huge. I find this situation, again, completely bizarre because we have a world in which Santa is clearly acknowledged as real by the news.
Yes.
Santa is in communication with the powers that be. Santa is not a secret identity. He doesn't have any – there is no point in this that he's trying to hide that he's Santa – except in this scene. Everywhere else, he's like flying around on Dasher for everybody to see him. Like, he doesn't care.
Right.
Totally fine. Except in this scene where he's clearly acknowledged worldwide as Santa. And the kid asks him, do you believe in Santa? And he doesn't just say, yeah, I'm Santa. Like, there's just, it just, the whole situation doesn't make sense. But it does make, and let me put it a different way.
Okay.
I really care about things making sense. Good movies do not always live on things making sense, because this song of a dad singing to his kid that I still believe in Santa Claus as an adult, even though you don't as a kid, is really neat.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of says why this happened. So even though the situation doesn't make sense to me, I totally like the song.
Yeah. Is this, and I wrote here, is this the same guy who didn't want to deliver presents? And he goes into this song. And it's a beautiful song, just as said, Steve. And then Iggy's dad sings about why he believes in Santa Claus. And he tells us how he stopped believing in him when he was an older kid as well, until Santa appeared by his bedside one night.
So you're too old for Santa Claus, he said with a smile. Then you're too old for all the things that make a life worthwhile. For what is happiness but dreams, and do they all come true? Look at me and tell me, son, what is real to you?
I have to tell you something. I cry every time during this song. Every single time. There's something very honest and earnest about the delivery of the song and the way it's being sung, the look on Santa, the animated look on Santa's face in stop motion, all of it. It just kind of works on me seeing that because of what he's saying, and that, you know, it's love. Christmas is love. Santa is love. That's what it represents. As you were saying earlier, Steve, the season of giving, trying to help people. And that is what courses through this song. And the reason he believes in him again, seeing him, and then he's and the lyrics of the song making it like this is about looking at things in a certain way and looking about it as a dream, as something to believe in, as something to aspire to. And so I think there's a real interesting point of view to take with the song about assessing Santa and Christmas.
I am trying to think about how to say this in a way that is kind and respectful, which is that I love this song about love and the Christmas spirit as love.
Yeah.
And I think saying, hey, we need to believe in love and kindness and have that spirit. And that spirit is part of what makes life worth living.
Yeah.
Fantastic message that I love. There's also this weird element of this scene, which is pressuring essentially me, the atheist kid, to believe in a religion. That is what this whole scene is. You know?
Wow.
I mean, it is. It's saying you have to have faith because that is what's going to make your life worth living. That is what the scene, that is the movement of this scene.
He's just saying it. He's not forcing the kid to do it. He's just saying, this is what I believe. If you're too old for this, and you might be too old for this, and what has happened is, but dreams, and do they all come true? He's not saying you need to do this or else I'm going to kill your mom. That's forcing someone to do it. He's
saying this is what is going to make, I mean, you got dad and mom and some random old guy off the street.
We're
saying like, well, that's what's happening in the scene. Well,
that's how you see it. I don't see it quite.
Is it not a random old guy off the street?
It's Santa Claus. I don't think it's random.
He didn't say it was Santa Claus.
He's Klaus. He's Klaus.
Klaus is coming in and saying, you know, they're selling you on why believing in Santa is going to make your life better.
Well, that's what he's saying.
That is definitely what he's saying.
Yeah. And then we move on, as you were saying earlier, to them all singing in present day to Iggy at the kitchen table. Iggy is very moved by this and actually sheds tears of emotion and says he might not be too old to believe if they still believe. And I think that's very sweet, you know, because he's coming to it from his own perspective, his own choice. He's making his own choice.
Oh, my gosh. I almost forgot. They were chasing the dog catcher's truck.
They were what?
He was taking their dog away in his truck and they were trying to catch him.
Their dog? Good grief. Vixen.
And as he realizes this, we cut to Vixen crying in the dog pound and we fade to black to another commercial break. So a sad moment here to end this particular section of the special, Steve.
I feel really bad for Vixen. And it isn't like the dog pound, the dog catcher, that has always been an icon of cruelty in our world. I don't know if people still think of it this way, but taking the poor dog away to the pound, awful.
Yeah, taking dogs off the street and stuff. Because we know what happens if no one claims those dogs. So as we come out of the break, we come back to Santa, Iggy, and his parents outside on their front door here or front area here. Iggy's dad gives Santa the 411 on the dog pound, it seems like. And Santa rides off on Dasher, now dropping all pretense of hiding his identity, Steve.
Gosh, did you see that?
I certainly did.
I thought there was something different about that man.
And Iggy's dad tells him he has to go to the mayor to help out Vixen, Santa, and the elves. Steve, Santa reveals himself here, but also Iggy's dad going, you got to handle this, my young child.
It's weird.
I can't go with you. Go to the mayor.
It's a weird movie. There's a lot of motivations where you go like, wait, you're doing what? Why are you doing this?
Yeah. I mean, was Iggy's dad there on a lunch break? I don't know, from the job. Did he have to go back?
Yeah, I'll send my 8-year-old to the mayor.
To the mayor. I don't know. Maybe in small towns, some of you may be old enough who are listening to us. In small towns, did kids go to the mayor? I mean, some small towns.
I grew up in a town of like 6,000 people.
Yeah.
And yes, there were times where I had known who the mayor was and the mayor, you know, cause it was, the mayor was one of the dads at school. You know?
Right.
Maybe. I don't know that I would have gone. I don't know that my dad would have sent me to the mayor to argue for Santa Claus. That seems like a weird move. And again, Santa Claus is clearly real. I don't know why we have to argue for it.
It's true. And then we cut to the mayor laughing at Jingle, Jangle, and Iggy, who are all there consequently at the same time telling their stories.
No more, please. I can't take any more. Reindeer, Santa Claus, elves.
The elves tell them they are on a secret mission, which elicits even more laughter from the mayor because maybe he's seen the Blues Brothers.
How can we convince you?
Oh, come on, son. What kind of fool do you think I am? You ain't got the chance of a snowball in Southtown of convincing me 1/10 of your story's on the level.
It hasn't snowed in Southtown for 100 years. And if they can give them a white Christmas, then he'll believe them, call all the mayors in the U.S. of A, and give Santa a national holiday, which I assume is going to be Christmas.
It's a deal.
Goodbye, Your Honor. We've got lots to do.
Yeah. See you all around the ski slopes, Mr. Mayor.
Which causes the mayor to start singing about snow coming to Southtown, which is apparently in Dixie, as from the look of it all and the style of this song. The kids join in as the mayor goes to all these locations with the townsfolk singing as well. And as the song finishes, we head to the dog pound. So, Steve, your thoughts on these scenes with the mayor and the mayor himself?
So, Santa's in the news. Clearly reported that Santa exists.
Yes, well.
Then we go to the mayor, who just laughs at the idea of Santa from beginning to end. He believes it is such a joke. It is completely ridiculous that there is a Santa, despite the fact that it was the front page of the paper this morning. And Santa has been seen flying around town on his reindeer. But putting that aside, he thinks it's hilarious, makes this deal about a white Christmas, but then goes out and advertises the thing that he doesn't believe while laughing at it. This mayor makes no sense. Look, I don't know what the competition was in the election. I know it's a small town, but I think we got to vote this guy out. That's my feeling about this
thing. Well, listen, he's not the first politician to not make any sense. So
fair.
For this mayor, I think he kind of works for this town. All right, as we cut to the dog pound, as I said, Santa has paid the fine now, strokes Vixen to calm her nerves, and she's shaking a little bit. As he removes the socks, the dog catcher now sees that it's a reindeer, because apparently this is a Clark Kent situation in Superman.
If anybody should come by asking about her...
Oh, two funny little characters. They were here about an hour ago, but they couldn't pay the fine. I told them to go see the mayor.
What am I going to do about those two? Now, don't you worry, Vixen. I'm going to take care of you first.
Puts Vixen on his shoulders, jumps on Dasher, and they fly off to the North Pole. And just then, Mrs. Claus tells us that Jingle gets a brilliant idea. And her idea of a brilliant idea is for them to call her. And we cut to them on Iggy's rooftop as Mrs. Claus shows up in a mini sleigh with Blitzen, and they hop on to go see Snow Miser.
It's nice that everyone has phones. Like, it's sort of like we can kind of recall each other all the time if we need to, but if we can't, then we can't, you know. There's convenient technology.
Absolutely. I just love the cuteness of Mrs. Claus going, "You got a brilliant idea," and it was to call me.
Yeah.
We cut to a beautiful ice castle in the snowy distance, and then to a ramp being let down for Mrs. Claus, Iggy, and the elves to walk into the castle. And this is cool. Iggy is now along for the ride on this. It's very interesting. And they are announced with trumpets as they walk in.
Here he comes now, the big ham.
Snow Miser walks out to his iconic song, and John Rocha has a big old stupid grin on his face as he sings at the top his lungs.
I'm Mr. White Christmas. I'm Mr. Snow. I'm Mr. Icicle. I'm Mr. Ten Below. Friends call me Snow Miser. Whatever I touch turns to snow in my clutch. I'm too much.
And this is the great Dick Shawn singing this, Steve.
Dick Shawn, of course, is one of those comedic actors and stand-up comedians who was a huge deal in the 60s and 70s. He's in It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World. He's the hippie actor who plays Hitler in The Producers. He's on lots of roasts, good friends with Mel Brooks, all of the TV. So you'd find him on Ed Sullivan or Merv Griffin or The Tonight Show. He's Jack Tripper's father on Three's Company, in Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater. All sorts of great stuff that he's in throughout this era. And then just the most, and I have to share it, it's upsetting and triggering, I'll say, but the most upsetting death, which is he died on stage doing stand-up, had a heart attack and collapsed, and the audience thought it was a bit, thought it was part of the bit, and they left him there for minutes laughing, thinking that this was part of a bit, and finally realizing something's really going on. And even there were some people in the audience who were still thinking it was a bit when the paramedics showed up, and he passed away at the age of 61. It just, that story just upsets me so much, but he went out doing what he loved. So there you go.
That's the way I'd like to go out. Dick Shawn
in the middle of a podcast with me. Oh my God.
Or really? No, on a stage. I think I'd rather go out a heart attack on stage. Maybe a live podcast recording of us or the Geek Buddies or Hot Mike. We'll see. And Steve, you know, the other reason I love Dick Shawn is we did an episode on Zorro the Gay Blade. And the companion piece at that time to Zorro the Gay Blade from George Hamilton was Love at First Bite. And Dick Shawn plays the detective inspector who does not believe Richard Benjamin is Renfield, does not believe there is a Dracula, and he is hilarious throughout the movie. So Dick Shawn in that movie, and It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, and this special, I will always love Dick Shawn for so many reasons, but those are the top three.
Friends call me Snow Miser, whatever I touch. Tears the snow in my clutch. Too much. Too much.
Steve, your thoughts on the song, the way it's presented, and the lyrics and the dancing, all of this stuff, and the your thoughts on it.
This is the, I will say, so the other episodes are built on songs.
Yes.
Frosty the Snowman, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And I will say, basically, in general, those songs are probably the best songs in those episodes. Yeah. They are great. You know, they are classic Christmas songs for a reason. I think these two songs are the greatest Rankin and Bass songs, period, including Rudolph and Frosty and Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Yeah.
I think they're fantastic. These are incredible songs.
Well, Mrs. Claus, how's your hubby?
Well, I'm afraid he's got a pretty bad cold, Snowy.
Oh, that's a shame, the poor fellow. He should have come to see me. I'd have given him a good one.
This causes Iggy to step forward to defend Santa, which, so now Iggy, who had been questioning it, not sure about it, thought it was for kid stuff, now he's taking more of the initiative to defend Santa here, which is great.
Don't you dare make fun of Santa Claus like that. He's the nicest person in the whole world.
Well, of course he is, Sonny. I love him a lot. Why, he's the best advertisement Snowbiz ever had.
He asks Mrs. Claus what she wants from him, and she says that she wants a snowstorm in Southtown.
The South is under the control of my stepbrother, Heat Miser. And every time I try to send a little refreshing snow down there, what does he do? He turns it into rain, a fog. And who needs that?
Well, if I get his okay, will you make it snow?
Sure thing.
It's a great setup. It's a perfect. This is why it shocks me that this isn't in the original books, because this is the plot. We have to get snow to Southtown, and that's in Heat Miser's land, and that's what we have to work out. It's a great setup.
And because you got to get the other side of the setup, as Steve said, they head off to see Heat Miser, much to Jingle's chagrin. And now we cut to a volcano in the distance with lava and smoke at the top of it. The Snow Miser song kicks in again, but this time the beat is slightly slower with more ominous beats and rapid strikes on the piano keys. Still very much in the Dixieland style.
I'm Mr. Green Christmas. I'm Mr. Sun. I'm Mr. Heat Blister. I'm Mr. 101. They call me Heat Miser. Whatever I touch starts to melt in my clutch. I'm too much.
And he even has little diatribes where he tells them that some like it hot, which is a nice reference to the movie, but he likes it really hot, as his mini-me sing the chorus, and he ends by also saying that he's too much, and he sits on his throne and makes a passive-aggressive crack about Santa not being there because he's out making another commercial for his brother. This is clearly the dynamic here of the brothers is established right off the bat in their opening songs here, Steve, clearly, because Heat Miser is feels like the son who's not getting the respect from his mom, and clearly makes it, he even states that Snow Miser is the favorite here. So you see this dynamic between sibling rivalry between these two guys.
It's some classic Smothers Brothers setup of mom always liked you best. And I think it works perfect. And again, I can't tell you which of the two numbers I like better because they're both great.
They're
both fantastic. And they're both a mix of a great song with great lyrics. And then the way they animated these big dance numbers, these are awesome. They're just very, and what's really interesting is these are both villains, essentially.
Yes.
Heat Miser and Snow Miser. And yet they have the most fun songs and you love their world. And so they are villains that we adore, you know?
Yeah. And who's voicing Heat Miser, brother?
Glad you asked. It's George S. Irving, who's another Broadway actor. He was acting in Oklahoma, which was a big hit in 1943, then got drafted into the Army in World War II. He came back, was nominated for a Tony for acting with Debbie Reynolds and Irene. He received the Oscar Hammerstein, who we just talked about in Sound of Music, Lifetime Achievement Award in 2008, and he died in 2016 after a storied acting career.
Wow. I think he does great here. And the Heat Miser was designed to mirror his face, just like the Snow Miser was designed to mirror Dick Shawn's face. So you do, if you see a picture of him, the jowls are very similar to Heat Miser's jowls, which I like. So Mrs. Claus pushes back on Heat Miser's little crack here, but clearly Heat Miser has some anger. He needs to get off his chest and complains about Santa some more, and Mrs. C finally says that she'll see what she can do about Santa being a bit more fair to Heat Miser.
I'll see what I can do. In the meantime, will you do us a favor?
I don't see why I should. Nobody ever does anything for me. But what is it?
Could you let it snow just for one day in the South?
What? Snow in the South?
Just for one day.
Never!
But he thinks about it and offers a deal that if his brother will let him heat up the North Pole, then he will let Southtown have some snow.
Well, heavens, I don't know. That would be up to your brother, not me.
Well, why don't you give the tutti-frutti snow cone a buzz on the hotline? See what he says.
Just then, his minions come in with a phone with flames painted on it. I need this phone. And she calls Snow Miser, and we get essentially, Steve, a Zoom call full of sibling rivalry banter between the brothers that only increases when Mrs. C reveals the offers. Snow Miser will not agree to the terms, and as they bicker more, Mrs. Claus has had enough, and she is going over their heads to Mother Nature, which causes the brothers much distress. So, Steve, your thoughts on her interaction with Snow Miser, and then the Zoom call here that we have between heat and snow going at.
First of all, I wrote down the same thing, that they're having a Zoom call, which is so funny. And what's so funny too, of like, oh, we're having a Zoom call filled with sibling rivalry and familial obligations and irritations and past history. It's like, yeah, pretty much looks like us during the pandemic is kind of what I thought. Yeah. But I think their relationship is really fun. What's interesting to me is that in the previous things we've covered, we melted the heart of the Winter Warlock.
Yeah.
We turned the Bumble positive. We're not really going to do that here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to come up with a compromise between Heat Miser and Snow Miser, but we're not going to resolve their relationship. There's a lot of ice and fire under the bridge, I think, with this one.
Yeah, to me, it feels like political thing, right? Oh, you guys are going to keep fighting. I'm going to the president to solve this. Like, it feels that way in the way they're going back and forth each other, because you're right. Neither of them was going to give. As much as they love and respect Mrs. Claus, and they clearly do, they were not going to give on either side of the situation.
We're going to see none other than Mother Nature.
Gosh. I must admit, I was more than a little nervous myself. I'd never met Mother Nature, but I knew she didn't like to be disturbed.
Remember that commercial, Steve, from the 70s?
I wrote down, so it's not nice to fool Mother Nature.
Yes.
It came out in 1974, the same year this came out.
Oh, I wonder if that was a last-minute ad or something.
I don't know. Because this must have taken a year to develop. It would seem unusual that they would have heard about, that one would have heard about the other while they were making them, but it sure made me think of the same thing.
Yeah, because it's a voiceover and you don't see her saying it, so they might have added it maybe in post at the end there. Anyway, we head to a simple house on a grassy patch of land in the middle of the sky in clouds, nestled between what I think is a moon or a sun and a rainbow and stars. And we meet Mother Nature, and she is an old school lady dressed in what looks to be an 1800s type of dress that is green with a parasol. And she has a large brim hat with a bird nest in the middle of it, complete with a live bird and eggs. Steve, and this is a great, great voiceover performance from Mother Nature.
Ooh, so they gave you a hard time, did they, Mrs. Claus?
Oh, I'm sure they didn't mean to.
Oh, yes, they did. They're nasty little boys, both of them.
It's Rhoda Mann, who I don't see a lot of credits for her, did a couple of animated things. She was on the Howdy Doody show in the 50s, and that's really all I have for her. But yeah, it is a great performance. And I think it's really interesting that, like, essentially we're getting little glimpses of the mythology and pantheon of the Rankin and Bass world, because yeah, it's like, oh, okay, so Santa Claus has magic powers and he's an immortal of some kind, but he doesn't have infinite powers. And then we have, you know, Heat Miser and Snow Miser, who are very, very powerful over these things, and they sit under the even more powerful Mother Nature. So we're getting, there's some powerful gods in this world that you have to learn to reckon with.
We're moving into echelons here for sure, yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, I'll straighten them out for you. Oh, you children.
They both appear to thunderbolts with a, in unison.
What is it, Mother dear?
Mother Nature lays out her demands, one day of spring in the North Pole and one day of snow in the South. But even then, both of the misers refuse to do it.
I won't do it.
Me neither.
Stop it. Stop it.
Yes, Mother dear.
And Mother Nature defends her kids, as most parents with misbehaved kids do, by defending them as, quote,
they're really nice boys, Mrs. Claus. Oh, sometimes they bicker, but you'll have no further trouble with them. I do hope Santa enjoys his holiday.
Just your thoughts on Mother Nature laying the law down here.
Well, one of the weird things that we're setting up, which is, again, it's confusing at the end, is that we want to create a holiday for Santa now. That's what Mother Nature just said.
Yes.
But the whole way we started was that Mrs. Claus was trying to convince Santa that the Christmas spirit was there so he would get off his butt and actually deliver Christmas. So there's like a weird, wait, are we trying to give him a break or are we trying to get him to go back to work?
Yeah, I will say I'm confused if Christmas exists or doesn't exist. And is the holiday not Christmas or is the holiday him just taking a day off?
So it's weird.
Just, yeah, it's a little weird. Confusing at times.
Well, and he doesn't take a day off.
In the end, he does not. Yeah.
Yeah.
We cut to the North Pole as Santa arrives with Vixen and Dasher. And as he takes care of Vixen, he sees a note from Mrs. Claus saying she's handling the jingle and jangle issue. So he gets into his rocking chair with his blanket and rests. I guess that's enough for Santa. We move to Southtown where it's snowing and the kids are playing on in the snow. We cut to the mayor talking to his wife, who tells him to wear his galoshes on his way home, which alerts him to the fact that it's snowing out there, which apparently he didn't know. And then randomly he breaks the fourth wall in this special by looking at us and saying,
I guess those fellas weren't pulling my leg about Santa Claus after all.
An interesting decision to give him the fourth wall break, Steve.
The mayor is he's a strange mayor. Like, he was laughing at the whole thing. Then he announced that it would happen. Yeah. Then it does happen and he's not paying attention. And then he's just like, okay, yeah, it's odd. It's an odd thing.
Very much so. And we go back to the North Pole as Mrs. Claus, Jingle and Jangle come in, waking up Santa to read him headlines from the papers, revealing that he does have a holiday, that it snowed in Southtown and people are taking the day off to honor Santa.
Well, Mama, I guess you've proved your point. There is some goodwill in the hearts of all men at this time of year. This, especially this, proves it. The world gave me a vacation. Ah.
And he leans back into his rocking chair, falling asleep.
Great. Santa gets a vacation. End of story. We're done with the movie, and this is why it was a year without the Santa Claus, because everyone loves Santa so much that they gave him his own break that he can enjoy. What a lovely story, John. Let's wrap things up.
But wait, there's more.
Oh, there's more.
We cut to Mrs. Claus telling us that children around the world hurled the happy message as we see children dressed in clothes from different countries. I really love this sequence. It's a nice respect to the culture, seeing all these people dressed in clothes. I'm sure animating this was exhausting. Doing the research to make sure you had the clothes correct was exhausting. But we see these children dressed in clothes from different countries coming over the horizon of a globe to deliver the message of Santa.
East, west, north, and south came gifts and gifts and gifts to spare from clever children everywhere. Tots, who hadn't a penny to spend, wrote him letters signed a friend. And they had more fun that strange December, they said, than any they could remember.
It's a beautiful sequence here.
Beautiful. Love it. It totally makes me think of It's a Small World, you know, that sort of, you know, kids from around the world. Totally. I think it's beautiful. So now, you know what? I was wrong. That wasn't the end of the movie because kids got off their butts and decided to go to work. They started to put in the labor to give Santa everything he deserved. They're just working really hard. They're learning the value of work. They're not just whining and saying, give me presents. They're actually learning the joy of giving to others. This is a beautiful, beautiful ending. I love this film. I'm glad we could. Let's fade to black. We're good now.
You're being a little Ebenezer. I sense you're a little Ebenezer. And we cut to Southtown in the snow again because there is more Steve. We then go to the North Pole. Santa is waking up and walking out of his house into the snow to mumble to himself. I've had some of those mornings as he checks the workstations and the reindeer pens. And just then, a bird delivers a letter to Santa from a young girl. And we get this beautiful sequence where we hear a young actress singing the Christmas classic, Blue Christmas, as we close in on a drawn little girl on a card with her arms out and a single tear coming from her left eye. Think of these sequences here, Steve. It's very beautiful stuff.
I think this is exactly the beautiful family stuff, and I think there is no more realistic moment about being a parent than this one, which is you're overworked, you're burnt out, you feel unappreciated, you really could use a break, and finally everybody appreciates you. They say, you know what? You do need a break. You deserve a break. We're going to bring you breakfast in bed. We're going to take care of you. We really are happy about you. Oh, but we really wish we could have Christmas. Can't you just get up out of that bed and maybe go to work so that we can get what we want? Come on. And that beautiful, lovely child who's sad and lonely, she really needs Santa to, you know, get off his butt and do his job. Come on, Santa, let's get going. And that is, there's nothing more about being a dad than that moment in this movie. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I can't even speak to that because obviously I'm not a dad, but I can totally understand that because I think sometimes people just want appreciation and then they're back at it. Like they just want that little moment of the stroke and like, okay, and now I can go back and get, and I think all of us have been in that moment and we certainly appreciate it when it happens.
God bless my soul.
He said at last.
By the big Borealis, by my maps and charts, I didn't know children had such kind hearts.
Mrs. Claus tells him how great it is that the kids brought him presents this year to bring Christmas to him so he could take a holiday. Steve said this is now he can take a holiday.
A holiday? Nonsense!
And we cut to Santa and Mrs. Claus standing outside their house with all the elves, gnomes, and reindeer gathered around who had thought they were going to have the time off.
Why is everybody standing around? There's work to be done. Load up the sleigh. Harness the team. Fetch my coat.
And when Jingle and Jangle and Mrs. Claus ask about his gout or the crick in his spine or his aches, he declares triumphantly,
my back feels fine. Never felt younger. Never felt stronger. Haven't got a symptom any longer.
They all cheer and Santa says,
now pile all those toys inside. There's no time to waste.
Tonight, regulators, we ride into the night sky. So thoughts on this, Steve? He's not going to take the holiday. He's actually now been re-inspired by people's love and the kids' love for him and that little girl who sent him that letter.
All jokes aside, what you said is exactly right. He was feeling unappreciated.
Yeah.
And then he got a massive showing of appreciation from the whole world, all the kids trying to do for him what he had done for them for so many years. And that reinvigorates the Christmas love. And I think that's fantastic. Part of me does actually kind of wish there was no Blue Christmas song because it's the blue, like if it's just, oh, I got all these gifts from them. I'm filled with energy. I want to bring gifts from you without the song of making him feel guilty. I would have maybe felt slightly better, but I know that's not what this movie is about. No. And I think it's a great moment to reinvigorate Santa. I also kind of go, maybe there needs to be like a union and a shop steward over at this elf workshop, man. I mean, it seems like, I don't know if these are safe working environments here.
Listen to you. Such a Scrooge. We cut to Santa riding away into the night sky, and then cut to Southtown with the mayor christening one of their roads as Santa Claus Lane. Just then, Santa appears above them to Iggy's delight as we hear "Here Comes Santa Claus" playing.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane.
He lands on Southtown, and we get a montage of Southtown celebrating Santa's arrival. Where did they get all these Christmas lights? And were they just lying around? And the town is beautifully decked out in Christmas decorations. And as he flies off, the song ends. We come back from the TV break, and we are back in Southtown as Mrs. Claus tells us that she's heard people say there never was such a Christmas day, and that is why children are merry on Christmas Eve, because they know no matter what, Santa Claus always comes. Then we cut to a different version of the Year Without a Santa Claus song with new lyrics, and it seems like it was all a dream, Steve, a la Bobby Ewing in Dallas, and that there will not be a year without a Santa Claus and all the joy that Santa brings, because Santa says it was all a dream.
There'll be no year without a Santa Claus.
I dreamed unhappy things
about a year without a Santa Claus and all the joy that Santa brings.
And that is the end of the year without a Santa Claus. So, Steve, your thoughts on these final scenes? And we end with this all being possibly a bad dream from Santa.
I think that there should be a law in all writing where anytime someone puts into their story, it was all a dream, that a consultant has to come to them and talk to them about it and say, are you sure you really want to do that? I certainly always did it in screenwriting classes where I'm just like, it really can, other than The Wizard of Oz, where it works great, it could really feel like a betrayal. So I've always blocked that out. Like, to me, but it is weird that the movie The Year Without a Santa Claus, there never is a year without a Santa Claus. That doesn't actually happen. But I think the song is great. I don't know if you've ever had this as a kid, but there were many things where I misremembered or misheard or something, where a word is sort of wrong. So in my mind, probably till I was at least 11 or 12, I thought it was heat miser and cold miser, because that makes sense. Heat and snow do not parallel each other. So it took me forever to realize that his name is Snow Miser. Right. And I thought that this movie was called Here Comes Santa Claus. Because that's just what it was in my brain, because like the other ones, that's the actual famous song, like the famous classic Christmas song. So I couldn't remember. So people I would say, oh, my favorite one is Here Comes Santa Claus. And they're like, there's no movie called that. And I'm like, yeah, it's the one with Heat Miser and Cold Miser. And they're like, no, it's Heat Miser and Snow Miser. And I'm like, no, it's Here Comes Santa Claus with Heat Miser, Cold Miser. I was very insistent and very wrong.
Yeah, I like this ending. I like the montage that he gets to fly through. It's almost like he's redoing, wasn't the name of the Boring Town? What was the name of it?
Sombertown.
It's almost like he's revisiting Sombertown through the Southtown experience. The streets are lined beautiful. I think the animation here is gorgeous. I think the design of the stop motion here is gorgeous. And so him flying through the streets here, I thought is a beautiful tribute to them and how they reinvigorated him. And I love that sequence, and the Here Comes Santa Claus totally works. It doesn't feel tacked on, which I think it could have been in danger of being. And then at the end, I do think the dream thing is a little weird, because we're so invested in this story and these characters. So when you tell us it was a dream, we're like, oh, so it never really was going to happen. This was all kind of in your head, but maybe he had been concerned about it. And then, oh, maybe it was right after the doctor came to see him and he rolled over. Maybe this whole thing was the dream, because the doctor told him how no one has Christmas spirit and no one cares about him. And so maybe this whole sequence from when he rolls over to this ending was the dream brought on by the final conversation with the doctor before he went to sleep. So I can excuse it on that level, but they never explain it before they end the special. So,
and I'll say it again. You really need to, you should ask, what benefit is there to make this a dream?
Right.
I don't think it makes it better in any way. So I wouldn't do it. Maybe take that line.
Want people to think that Santa would ever not want to be Santa. Maybe they felt they were they wanted to play both sides, so to speak.
But that's exactly the problem. Is like, then you're saying if that's the point, what you're saying is the entire premise of my movie.
Yeah,
I am concerned that people won't believe, so I'm going to tell them that the basic premise of my movie never happened. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that doesn't make it. Either you believe that Santa could feel burnt out, right, in which case it shouldn't be a dream, or you don't think anyone will believe that, in which case you shouldn't make the whole movie. You know?
Right.
That's well, my feeling.
It's a children's special. I think they just didn't want to piss anybody off.
I guess.
So some tidbits here at the end. Unlike previous efforts centered around a single song, this special utilized several classic Christmas songs in the scene, from Sleigh Rides and Blue Christmas to Anyone Can Be Santa and Here Comes Santa Claus. First of all, I didn't know Anyone Can Be a Santa was a classic Christmas song.
Yeah, I'd never heard it either.
Yeah. So it's something new for me. And Shirley Booth's narration was meant to capture the tradition of writing a Christmas letter to friends and family. Mm. And as you said earlier, Steve, this was her final role. And as I said, a live-action remake aired on NBC in 2006. It was not that well received. It was much hyped for being the first film to shoot in New Orleans post-Hurricane Katrina. Mm. It spent all of the Miser Brothers content from the original in a single scene and inserted lots of unnecessary padding. These Rankin and Bass Christmas specials, though, Steve, have lived on and certainly have been things that people have loved and enjoyed watching and collecting over the years. And for those of you who don't know, they have cleaned them up. And if you have not purchased them, I highly recommend them if you love watching them, because I watched the HD versions of these on Blu-ray, and they're gorgeous. The animation comes to life, right, Steve? The vibrancy of it all is so incredible.
Particularly when you get to these later episodes. I mean, I think we mentioned it when we were doing Rudolph. Just watching Rudolph, I was like, oh my God, this looks so much better than I had ever imagined it looking. But then when you get to the later ones, where there's so much more time spent on the animation and the budgets are bigger. And then, so watching Santa's sleigh take off at the end of this movie and fly through Southtown, it looks phenomenal. I totally agree. They did an incredible job cleaning these up.
Yeah. And just some final notes here. The special premiered in 1974 on ABC. It aired annually on Freeform during its 25 days of Christmas until 2017. And as of 2018, AMC American Movie Classics airs the uncut special as part of their Best Christmas Ever block. The special also airs on Warner Brothers' own TNT and TBS as part of the All I Watch for Christmas block. And Warner Brothers Entertainment currently distributes the special through their ownership of the post-1974 Rankin-Bass Productions library. Warner Home Video released the special on Blu-ray on October 5th, 2010, making it the first Rankin-Bass production to be released in that format. So a lot of people don't see this one as the best of theirs, yet it was the first thing they released on Blu-ray. And to me, that makes me think that they do secretly believe themselves that this is the best of all of them here. And a sequel titled A Miser Brothers Christmas was released in 2008, produced by Warner Brothers Animation and Cup of Coffee Studios, which also used stop-motion animation. Mickey Rooney, still alive in 2008, reprised his role as Santa Claus, and so did George S. Irving, who was still alive, reprising his role as Heat Miser. But sadly, Dick Shawn and Shirley Booth had passed away. They were replaced by Juan Chirion and Catherine Disher as Snow Miser and Mrs. Claus, respectively. And that's all I have on The Year Without a Santa Claus. So, Steve, do you want to give your final thoughts on this?
I would be happy to. I would like to start with the character of Santa Claus, because what I think is interesting in the, what did we say? It was the RBU, the Rankin and Bass universe.
Yeah, the RBU.
Is that when we first meet Santa, he's a weird character in Rudolph. Mm. He's skinny and has to get fat in order to become Santa for Christmas. He's not a particularly nice guy. He's kind of selfish. It's like, and he exists, frankly, to create the conflict and the negative atmosphere that leads Rudolph to go on his adventure and go on his hero's journey. Then we get a phenomenal origin story of Santa in Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And what you and I both commented on is this is not a character that grows or changes. This is a character who knows exactly who he is from the very beginning. What I find really interesting when we get to The Year Without a Santa Claus is we took that character who didn't really change, who knew exactly who he was, who was just, I'm the giving guy who's going to deliver presents on Christmas and make toys and make little children happy, and that's who I am. And now we add an actual human element to him of he's been doing that for a long time. You know what it is? You know, we compared him to Captain America on some level of like that character who knows who he is, who's a fully good person.
Yeah.
Is that this is Endgame, where Captain America is going, maybe I don't have to keep being the hero.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I can be something else. Maybe I deserve my own life. And that is what Santa is suddenly doing in this episode. And I actually really like that they've humanized him in that way. So that's the first thing. I actually really enjoyed it. And all jokes aside, and yes, I definitely related to some Santa stuff that gave me some strong feelings. I really, really like that they're exploring this. And I really, really like the kids making Christmas for Santa to say, yeah, you do deserve a day off. I think that's really cool. And then you add to that, which is almost like in a separate pot. It's a totally its own thing, is Heat Miser and Snow Miser. I mean, those numbers are so good. They just elevate the whole episode into a whole other place. And I could literally go on YouTube and just watch those as music videos because I love them. Both songs, I think they're fantastic.
Yep.
And so all of that, and of course we've seen the game of the animation just get upped every single time. A decade later now, they are firing on all cylinders. They really know how to do this and everything looks beautiful. So I think these are great episodes and it has been super fun to revisit them.
I agree, Steve. This was a great idea. I'm glad we did it. It was so much fun to have an excuse to watch these again this Christmas season. And then this is my favorite one. So I appreciate you letting me lead, or, you know, a suggestion that I lead it. And this was a blast to talk about. I rediscovered how much I love this special. There's just a beautiful message here. And I get your points and certainly there's criticisms on story. But at the end of the day, it's about remembering why Christmas is important, why Christmas matters. And although you may not believe in Santa Claus and what have you, it's the idea of Santa Claus that's important, the idea of giving to people around the world, not expecting anything. Maybe in a dream sequence, you might let a little bit of your humanistic impulses to be appreciated for your work slip out and have it lead you into a fever dream. But at the end of the day, the inspiration he has at the end to go and bring this Christmas and understand his importance, I think is wonderful because it symbolizes Christmas. I think Christmas is important. And I'm one who was for many years a Scrooge about Christmas. And once that broke for me and that my heart grew a few sizes, I really understood what it meant and why it's important. And I cherish this time. And especially as the world is crazier and crazier and angrier at times and stuff's going crazy all over the globe, not just here in the States. I hold on to Christmas even harder. And I think it should start even earlier. All these people who get upset about, you know, the, why do I see Christmas decorations after Thanksgiving or in November, at the beginning of November? Damn it, it should be there at the beginning of November because we need to remember why we're on this earth, why we're human beings, and the ability we have to create goodness in the world and to spread goodness in the world. And by the end, that's what Santa is doing. He's back spreading that Christmas spirit, spreading the unity and goodness into the world. And I love that that's an element of it. And of course, you're absolutely right. All the different characters make this wonderful. Shirley Booth's performance is so incredible. I don't think this works at all without her. She's so great in the way she delivers it. Jingle Jangle is so funny as a duo. And Iggy, earnestness and honesty as he comes around. He's honestly skeptical and honestly on board once he comes around on it, I think really works. And of course, the Miser Brothers. That song will remain forever. And I still have a dream to do this as karaoke with Michael Vogel someday. And this is the stuff that makes it so fun and makes you come back to being a kid again when you were an adult. And I love seeing this special and talking about it with you. It was like reliving it all over again. So much fun. And I hope our listeners enjoyed our visit into the Rankin and Bass universe and this special episode as well.
So I have one thing to add, which is you've mentioned Michael Vogel and you and he doing Heat Miser and Snow Miser as karaoke, but you haven't said who's who.
Oh, well, I would obviously be Heat Miser, being the larger of the two, and also being at times the person who's like, oh, you like him best, as has been our narrative with Michael, and Michael would totally be Snow Miser, just for the performance, and he is at times too much. So, yeah, that's the way it would go there.
I think we need to make this happen. I don't know if people can pull something off on Patreon. Maybe this is a Geek Buddies live episode. Maybe this week, but at some point, we have to make it happen. And I'm certain that McClung and I can sing backup. I mean, we can, you know, like there's a, this is something that should happen.
I agree.
And if you want to see that happen, well, maybe you should put a note on our Facebook page. Just do a search for the Cinephiles. If you would like to push MKTune on Twitter, along with At The Roca Says, you can go to Cine_Files on Twitter and create a tweet that brings all these things together. If you would like to post a video of Heat Miser and Snow Miser on Instagram, you can look for the Cinephiles podcast and tag us there. And of course, if you want to support the show, you can do it at patreon.com/thecinephiles, where maybe we'll create a whole other tier for demands of karaoke performances from various members of the Cinephiles family. You can also support the show on Apple Podcasts. If you're an Apple person, you can buy or stream these Rankin and Bass films along with everything we've ever reviewed on Cinephiles.net. And I am SR Morris on Twitter and on Blue Sky and SR Morris 1 on Instagram. John, how would people find you?
You can always find me at The Roca Says on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok and Blue Sky now. And the Outlaw Nation on Twitch and my YouTube channel, youtube.com/JohnRocaSays, where you can see the Geek Buddies on there, as well as the Hot Mic and the Jedi Way, and my reactions and reviews and Spill the Tequila. And every once in a while, Steve pops on to review a film with me or have a fun discussion about a big topic going on in the world of entertainment or in the world, period. So come and subscribe to us there on the Outlaw Nation.
It's definitely worth your subscription. You get a lot of great content there. And I think that's it for this week. Happy holidays to everyone. Yes, we hope you have a wonderful, wonderful New Year's. And we are going to be back in the new year with a special live show with some of your Cinephiles' favorite guests to discuss 2024 and our predictions and what we're excited about for 2025. And I think for my partner, John Rocha, we are going to sign off for 2024. And we're looking for a whole new year of movies in 2025 on the Cinephiles.
Take care, everybody.